Welcome to WHRO's Weekly Edition. I'm Jordan Christie.
And I'm Barry Graham.
We highlight the week's news and stories happening all over Hampton Roads. We have some in-depth stories for you in this first week of June. National data shows Black women are more likely to be treated differently when voicing concerns during pregnancy. One local mother turned her loss into support for families struggling with stillbirths and grief.
I would say things and they kind of like brushed it like, oh no, you're okay. Don't worry about it.
The USS Gerald R. Ford is back in Norfolk. That means an overhaul of the plumbing system is underway after dealing with faulty toilets for a year at sea.
The region's transportation group is figuring out how exactly driverless cars will impact traffic, for better and for worse. More research is flagging the dangers of screen time for children. In response, the Virginia Beach School Board is considering barring Chromebooks in classrooms from pre-K through first grade. WHRO's Ashley White reports on the battle for screen time.
The screen time policy outlines usage for elementary students. It would limit Chromebooks and similar devices in classrooms, but not libraries for pre-K through first grade. School Board Vice Chair Carolyn Weems, who helped author the policy, said it was common sense, designed to promote hands-on learning.
Of course, we are not saying that we don't believe technology is important, but we are saying it needs to be balanced.
During the discussion, a few parents and about half the board spoke in favor of the policy. However, several board members and teachers raised issues. Most asked that the policy be modified for limited classroom use that teaches good digital citizenship and supports lessons. The policy is up for adoption at the June 8th meeting. Ashley White, WHRO News.
Acidity is rising in the Chesapeake Bay even more quickly than out in the ocean. As WHRO's Katherine Hefner reports, William & Mary's Virginia Institute of Marine Science is researching potential impacts to oyster farms.
The ocean absorbs a third of all the carbon dioxide humans release into the atmosphere. That causes a cascade of chemical changes underwater, including a rise in acidity. Emily Revest with VIMS says shellfish like oysters and clams are sensitive to these changes.
When the water is more acidic, it makes it more difficult for the animal to build its shell.
VIMS has teamed up with local shellfish farmers to study the issue in action. One is Alex Lambert on the Eastern Shore. He launched his oyster farm about 7 years ago and quickly learned there are a lot of factors to keep track of, like weather and water quality. Acidification is another he wants to learn more about.
While it's not wiping out our hatcheries right now, it probably is impacting the shell strength, and if it gets worse in the future, that could potentially be devastating.
Lambert says he's glad to get ahead of the issue. Katherine Hafner, WHRO News.
Local hemp growers in Hampton Roads are making tough calls after Governor Abigail Spanberger vetoed this year's bill to set up a retail cannabis market. WHRO's Toby Cox fills us in on the state of the market.
When Julian Redcross learned about Spanberger's veto, he was shocked.
I thought it was a joke.
He and his twin brother, Jonathan, started growing hemp in 2019, but stopped this year. They hope the state eventually sets up a retail market that gives small businesses like theirs a fighting chance. Until then, Julian says they plan to hunker down and wait.
We just have an empty space right now that's costing money, but like I said, we didn't jump over the edge just yet.
For others, the veto sealed their fate. Brad Wynn started growing hemp in 2023 and stopped in 2024. He says he can't afford to wait any longer.
I'm shutting down end of June, my business.
And after years of waiting, he says more hemp businesses will likely go belly up. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
National data shows Black women are more likely to be treated differently during pregnancy and delivery, especially when they raise concerns about pain or warning signs. WHRO's Yi-Ching Wang chronicles how one mother turned her loss into a source of support for families navigating stillbirth and grief in Hampton Roads.
In 2009, Heather Wilson was expecting a baby girl. She plans to name her Kennedy. Wilson's pregnancy seemed normal at first, then she developed preeclampsia, a dangerous pregnancy complication that causes high blood pressure.
The doctors never really prepared me for how serious it was and didn't let me know that it could cost me my life or cost my daughter her life, which is what ultimately happened.
One day, Kennedy stopped moving. When Wilson and her husband rushed to the hospital, doctors could not find a heartbeat. Wilson labored for about 26 hours before delivering her daughter, stillborn.
We went from, you know, painting a room, decorating a room, putting her name on the wall, washing all her clothes and dressed and preparing for a baby, installing car seats, to planning a funeral.
As her family navigated the loss, they ran into another problem. There was nothing small enough for Kennedy to wear.
So they were even looking at like doll clothes. And even though she was 5 pounds, and though there may be preemie clothes in the store, they're not appropriate for a funeral. They're onesies.
Years later, Wilson turned that painful memory into Kennedy's Angel Gowns, a nonprofit that makes burial gowns for babies from donated wedding dresses. Inside her Virginia Beach home, one bedroom has been turned into a sewing workspace. Almost 100 angel gowns hang in neat rows, with colorful threads and ribbons stored on the shelves below. Made in soft colors like white, cream, or pink, the tiny satin and lace gowns are provided to families free of charge. National data show Black women are about twice as likely as white women to experience stillbirths. Studies have found women of color were more likely to say they were mistreated during labor and delivery, including being shouted at or ignored. Wilson feels that happened to her. Maylin Key, who used to live in Hampton, says her experience with pregnancy and the medical system in Hampton Roads was another such case. Her son, Masai, was stillborn after she went into labor.
I would say things and they kind of like brushed it, like, oh no, you're okay, don't worry about it.
Her doula, Nikita Hill, says many of the Black mothers she supports deal with similar issues.
I see it in real life. I see my mamas being ignored. I see it because I also take white clients. And when I walk in with them, they are treated differently. They're listened to.
Hill says symptoms such as headaches or high blood pressure are sometimes dismissed as normal pregnancy discomfort. Jennifer Lesko is an associate professor at Virginia Commonwealth University's Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology. She says VCU is trying to identify risks such as hypertension and obesity so doctors can monitor patients more closely before a pregnancy becomes dangerous.
We need to improve access to preconception counseling and care so that patients can come in and understand sort of their general risks.
Her department also works with the state's Pregnancy Loss Initiative to help parents navigate grief after a miscarriage, stillbirth, or infant loss. Kennedy's Angel Gowns has grown to include around 20 volunteers and supports families across Hampton Roads and sometimes nationwide. The group now funds funerals, runs support groups, and trains doulas to help parents navigate pregnancy loss. A decade after she made the first angel gown, Heather Wilson distributes 4 or 5 gowns every week.
I'll never stop doing it. As long as there's a need for these gowns, I'll be sewing them.
Yiqing Wang, WHRO News.
Still ahead on Weekly Edition, Old Dominion researchers are working to put a dollar value on Hampton Roads' public parks and trails. But first, Virginia had until Monday to implement a federal court order that's expected to let thousands of people vote. Critics say the state hasn't done enough to follow the order. VPM News' Dean Mirshahi has the latest.
In January, a federal judge partially struck down Virginia's rule to strip a person's voting rights for any felony conviction. Under the court order, people can now only lose their voting rights if they're convicted of crimes considered common law felonies in 1870. This includes stuff like murder and arson, but not many of today's crimes like some drug-related offenses. But the state's elections department is still holding voter registrations from applicants with felony convictions who haven't had their rights restored by the governor. Mary Bauer, executive director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia, says putting applications on hold feels inconsistent with the spirit of the court order.
It is not, in fact, allowing people to register to vote if that registration is put on hold.
The elections department says these applications need to be reviewed. Demir Shahi, VPM News.
A proposed deal between Dominion Energy and Florida-based NextEra Energy could create the nation's largest investor-owned utility company. But energy experts say Virginia customers shouldn't expect dramatic changes.
The Virginia Center for Investigative Journalism at WHRO's Kunle Falayi reports.
If approved, NextEra would add Dominion's 4 million customers to its existing 12 million customers in Florida. VCIG at WHRO analyzed electricity prices in Virginia and Florida. Virginia residential customers paid an average of 15.3 cents per kilowatt hour in 2025. Florida customers paid slightly less, about 15.2 cents. Joao Pedro Ferreira of the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service says Virginia's regulated utility system makes major price swings unlikely.
We are already operating under a monopoly market. Nobody can say if the costs are going up or down.
The deal could also mean more renewable energy in Virginia. NextEra is one of the nation's largest clean energy producers. Kunle Falayi, the Virginia Center for Investigative Journalism at WHRO.
Virginia will possibly go another year without a legal retail cannabis market after Governor Abigail Spanberger's veto. WHRO's health reporter Yiching Wang reports that means efforts to develop regulations before the market opens will also be delayed.
Barbara Biddle runs a hemp business and founded the Cannabis Small Business Association. She supports a legal market but understands the veto. She says the Commonwealth needs stronger rules for industry compliance and training for police and first responders before a retail market opens.
It was a necessary action that needed to happen because while we fully support legalization, we don't think that this was the right vehicle for it.
But without a bill signed into law, the Cannabis Control Authority has a limited ability to start planning those rules for a future market. Health experts say the delay will leave consumers buying cannabis products outside of a regulated retail system, which can pose greater health risks. Yiching Wang, WHRO News.
The USS Gerald R. Ford, a $13 billion aircraft carrier, spent nearly a year at sea with a faulty toilet system. Now, the ship is back in Norfolk, which means the plumbing can be overhauled to fix the issues. WHRO's Steve Walsh breaks down the situation.
During a recent Senate Armed Services Committee hearing, Senator Tim Kaine pressed the top leaders of the Navy about the problems with the sewage system on the USS Gerald R. Ford while it was out on its record-breaking deployment.
Are we taking steps with respect to the Ford and other ships in that category to make sure that the plumbing system is sufficient for the needs of sailors deployed?
The Virginia Democrat said he had heard from his constituents about problems on USS Ford. The carrier received increasing scrutiny as the Ford went from the military operation around Venezuela to the war in Iran. The story was picked up by outlets around the world, which questioned the strain on the crew as their deployment dragged on. Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Daryl Cottle pushed back on the seriousness of the issues with the toilets, which the Navy calls heads.
So this is a less than a 1% problem. Now, it's a significant problem when the heads are down.
Right.
But the time between somebody flushing a T-shirt in there, a rag in there, something else in there that's not supposed to be by our procedure, till it was up again is like a couple hours.
NPR was originally contacted by a parent of a sailor on board the Ford about the plumbing problems. I asked Cottle about the issues with the system breaking down when he came to the homecoming for the carrier in May.
The sanitation systems on board any ship, submarine, destroyer, cruiser, carrier, all have challenges. It's not whether or not if that happens, it's when it does, how do we attack it, fix it, get it back online. And the team on Ford, you know, is very good at that. It's more of a vacuum drag system, and they're extraordinary at keeping it up online.
Still, the Ford is getting an upgrade, says Rear Admiral Kayvon Hakimzadeh, commander of Norfolk Naval Shipyard. The problems on the Ford were known since before the carrier was finished being built. A decade earlier, toilets on USS George H.W. Bush kept going down when its vacuum system lost pressure, meaning the toilets wouldn't flush.
We are implementing the same fixes that the Navy did for the Bush.
Emails reviewed by NPR show hull technicians on the Ford were asking sailors help to find leaks among the hundreds of toilets. A loose valve in one area can cause all of the toilets in that part of the ship to fail. Rear Admiral Hakimzadeh says they will install more valves so sailors can isolate the problems more quickly.
Right now, it's essentially in quarters. The new system subdivides it significantly further so that a problem in like one bathroom doesn't cut off a quarter of the ship.
Given all the plumbing issues, the ship also requires an acid flush to clean the pipes. The Government Accountability Office said back in 2020 that it cost $400,000 and can only be done after the ship comes home from deployment. For NPR News, I'm Steve Walsh in Norfolk, Virginia.
Researchers at Old Dominion University are helping put a dollar value on public parks and trails in Hampton Roads. WHO's Catherine Hafner shares the purpose behind the researchers' work.
The team works to appraise the benefits of green space like the Back Bay Refuge in Virginia Beach and Elizabeth River Trail in Norfolk. Professor Laura Costadone says the numbers show it's worth it for officials to prioritize nature for flood protection and residents' well-being.
It's an opportunity to foster more parks, tree canopies, but really like implementing those solutions in those areas that need it the most.
She says it's hard to capture intangible benefits like improving mental health, but the calculations grow more detailed over time using surveys and crowdsourced data. The goal is,
if we are able to monetize these benefits, we can give them voice in the decision making.
That includes cities deciding how to manage limited land using limited resources. Catherine Hafner, WHRO News.
A historic Norfolk church commemorated a progressive Episcopalian milestone Wednesday. WHRO's Denise Watson shares more.
Christ in St. Luke's Episcopal Church will host a Gay Pride Eucharist, a first ever celebration for the Episcopal Diocese of Southern Virginia. In 1976, the governing body of the Episcopal Church passed a resolution stating gay people are children of God who have a full and equal claim with all other persons upon the love, acceptance, and pastoral concern and care of the church. 50 years later, Rector Noah Van Neel said being a safe space for LGBTQ+ individuals remains a priority.
We thought there would be particularly powerful this year, perhaps, to have something of a public witness of that support. There's been a lot happening within the world that is making it more challenging for that community.
Susan Haynes, the diocese's first female bishop, will preside. Denise Watson, WHRO News.
Freelance writer Vicki L. Friedman contributed to this report.
The group that plans the region's transportation projects is considering how driverless vehicles may change traffic in Hampton Roads, for better or for worse. WHRO's Toby Cox wades through the traffic to give us this report.
The Hampton Roads Transportation Planning Organization released the latest iteration of its long-term plan. It looks at how our travel habits may change between now and 2050, and how the region should prioritize different projects. Dale Stith leads the team behind the plan. She says something they factored in is driverless vehicles.
We recognize when we're looking out 25 years that that will be part of the system.
She says autonomous vehicles may make people more mobile who can't drive themselves. Driverless cars could make public transit more flexible, but solving one problem could create another.
You might not need parking if these cars can just circle the network, but then that could make congestion worse.
Stith says the plan considers other factors too, like how flooding could affect travel and where employment opportunities may be. It recommends $15 billion worth of priority projects over the next few decades. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
Hemp, the type of cannabis plant bred for its strong fibers and health benefits rather than psychoactive properties, has a long and storied history in the Commonwealth. WMRA's Sarah Prince talked with hemp businesses in Virginia about how they process the crop and the regulatory challenges they face.
Hemp has been part of human history for thousands of years. At Pure Shenandoah in Elkton, a banner stretches across the wall tracing hemp history back to 8,000 BC. Abner Johnson is the chief operating officer of Pure Shenandoah.
And then we discover some healing properties of it early in 2800 BC.
When Europeans crossed the Atlantic, hemp came with them, arriving in places such as Jamestown, where it quickly became essential.
They actually had it mandated that farmers had to grow hemp. And it was because they were using so much.
That was back in 1619, when the Virginia Assembly ordered colonists to grow hemp for rope, sails, and rigging for the British Empire. But hemp's story hasn't been linear. It has followed a cycle of widespread use, decline, stigma, and then rediscovery. Today, that rediscovery is happening at the intersection of farming, manufacturing, and wellness. And Pure Shenandoah is helping build up that rediscovery as both a hemp grower and processor, especially since hemp farming has been on the decline in Virginia after the market was oversaturated 6 years ago. As far as growing hemp is concerned, the methods depend on what it's used for. industrial hemp for textiles and building materials is planted densely, sometimes up to 1 million seeds per acre, to produce tall, strong fibrous plants similar to bamboo. Hemp grown for cannabinoids is spaced farther apart, encouraging bushier plants with more flowers. Because specific compounds at different dose levels affect people differently, hemp and cannabis products don't come with simple instructions. And cannabis researchers say this is where we just need more information. Ryan Vandry runs the Cannabis Science Lab at Johns Hopkins University.
You know, people often want to say, well, is cannabis good or bad for condition X? And, you know, what people often lose sight of is that, you know, we're kind of, I think, outside of the area of making blanket recommendations.
From a practical standpoint, highly controlled conditions can yield very reliable botanical products.
Further away you get from the raw plant material, the more consistency and the more reliable it tends to be, as long as the process for manufacturing is the same.
Without those standards and without clear-cut statewide lab testing protocols in Virginia, even with accredited labs, consumers largely place their trust in growers, processors, and sellers. When it comes to the science of manufacturing, at Pure Shenandoah, the raw hemp is processed for wellness uses, preferably with carbon dioxide extraction, which turns the plant material into a food-grade oil used in a range of products. But ethanol extraction is also used, though it's a bit of a strong flavor.
It almost looks like peanut butter, but it comes off like a soft-serve ice cream.
Gross.
And it's a very potent oil, and we can utilize that for certain products. We like to use it for topicals, because those fats actually help absorb it into your skin better.
In nearby Rutgersville, another processor, Green Valley Nutrition, is doing similar work. Ethan Pompeo is the founder and CEO.
The goal of that initial extraction is to get the enriched CBD enriched oil out of the plant material, and from there we can distill down the pure CBD.
For both Green Valley Nutrition and Pure Shenandoah, testing becomes critical, ensuring products are safe, consistent, and meet state standards. Under Virginia law, hemp products may not contain more than 0.3% THC and have to be clearly labeled with information about the laboratory where they were tested. The shifting regulations have challenged the processing industry. The regulatory hurdles are a concern for farmers as well. According to Pompeo, many have stopped planting hemp because they're waiting to see what happens with marijuana legalization.
And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people were led to believe that this was going to get like tobacco land out of that rut, you know, in Southwest Virginia in particular, grow hemp, you know, and you have a bright future. And that's just not how it played out at all.
The effect, says Pompeo, has been economic, pushing some processors to start looking across state lines for hemp to purchase. Still, hemp's potential remains on many fronts, just as it has for thousands of years. And like its past, hemp's future may depend less on the plant itself and more on whether the systems around it are ready and capable to support it. I'm Sarah Prince.
You've been listening to WHRO's Weekly Edition. We had help today from WHRO's Toby Cox, Vicki L. Friedman, Catherine Hafner, Steve Walsh, Yiching Wang, Denise Watson, and Ashley White.
VPM's Dean Mershahi, VCIJ's Kunle Falayi, and WMRA's Sarah Prince. Also, Connor Worley, who produced today's show.
And reminder that you can always catch full episodes on the Weekly Edition podcast feed.
You can get your news updates at WHRO.org and the WHRO Reports podcast feed. For all of us at WHRO and WHRV, I'm Barry Graham.
And I'm Jordan Christie. Have a great weekend.